Brad Friedman, and you're listening to an encore rebroadcast of The Brad Show on Raw Radio. Don't bother to call us, because ain't no one gonna answer your calls. We are living on a prayer here on The Brad Show via Raw Radio. Newsmakers, whistleblowers, politicians, and those who cover them, and those who don't. This is your friendly citizen blogger, Brad Friedman, here halfway there indeed. Hour number three of your Brad Show via Raw Radio, that media hellstorm. Yeah, you've heard of us. We're glad to have you with us to participate in the show. We're going to have Carl Canetta from the Project on Defense Alternatives coming up here in this hour. Call now, 323-650-1286 if you have any questions or think you may have questions for Mr. Canetta, because, boy, that last few minutes with Colleen Rowley there, the phones lit up, maxed out the joint, and, well, we couldn't get to everyone. So my apologies there. Call now. Or you can participate at the bradblog.com in the open thread that Winter Patriot is keeping his eye on. We're going to have a little bit later Patricia Burney from the Tucson Raging Grannies, and a special surprise for you Brad Blog fans out there. I'm asked to give my apologies to Heidi from Cotati, California, that we tried to get you on the air but had some problems with the phones getting you on at the last minute. Okay, what are the... because I had to get out quickly from that last segment, I want to be sure to give Colleen Rowley's website again. That's Colleen Rowley. She spells it C-O-L-E-E-N Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y. .com. If you'd like to support her candidacy with the bedrock of ethics in government, although that seems to be kind of old-fashioned these days, don't it? Hey, next week, by the way, August 6th, it's the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, so we hope to have very special Voting Rights Act program for you next Saturday night, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. as ever. And I should also remind you that you can listen via the IBC radio network to our rebroadcast every Sunday morning from 12 noon to 4 p.m. on the East Coast and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the West Coast. Okay, before we get to Carl Canetta... Wait, I've got my pages out of order. Who taught this guy how to do radio? Oh, no one. This portion of the Brad Show is made possible in part by HereticInc.com. When it comes to the world of political t-shirts, you will find there's not a lot of variety out there, but there's the anti-Bush apparel or cheap t-shirts emblazoned with Che Guevara for yuppies. However, Heretic is a political t-shirt company that does things a bit differently, and they have thus, in less than 8 months, become the fastest growing t-shirt company on the internet. Where others carelessly throw up images of Che, Heretic's first design was Che's face with the words, "Suburban White Kids Unite!" Yeah, you can get that over at HereticInc.com, where they have over 30 t-shirt designs to choose from, covering an array of social and political issues with slogans like Save Wall Street, Privatize Social Security, Born Again Christians, The Most Obnoxious Ones of All, or Bringing You Liberty Whether You Like It or Not. Beyond making shirts for consumption, Heretic's key to success has been its desire to give back to its core supporters. And the newest project Heretic has taken on is making shirts for blogs like TrueLiberal.com, our friends, or, of course, RawStory.com, also our friends, to help raise money for this up-and-coming media. In fact, they also made shirts for the Brad Blogathon, and you can buy your own. Desi is wearing it here in the studio. It looks fetching. It says, what does it say there? The Brad Blog 6 or 7 squad being the media. Oh, yeah, it's pretty cool. Go get your own via HereticInc.com. That's HereticInc.com. Check into them for all the details. All right. It's also pointed out to me that next August 6th, aside from being the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, which I suspect everyone will ignore in favor of blonde girls missing, we'll cover it. But as well, August 6th is also, it's pointed out to me by Jamie, PDB Day. That's right, the Presidential Daily Briefing, August 6th. That said, Saddam was determined to attack inside the U.S. So, not Saddam, see? Thank you. See, they've even got me doing it. Osama was, boy, you'd think I'd be getting paid by this White House. Osama was determined to attack inside the U.S., and that was so unimportant that George W. Bush went on vacation. All right, well, the resulting mess of it all is currently in Iraq. And so we're going to talk about Iraq with a guy who knows what the hell's going on, unlike me, Mr. Carl Canetta. Since January 1991, Carl Canetta has been a co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives. Prior to joining PDA, not to be confused with the Progressive Democrats of America, Mr. Canetta was a research fellow of the Institute for Defense and Disarmament Studies and also served for 3 years as editor of the journal Defense and Disarmament Alternatives and the Arms Control Reporter. As co-director of PDA, Mr. Canetta has authored and co-authored numerous reports on security issues and has published in all sorts of impressive defense-related journals, as well as the mainstream media from the Washington Post to the Boston Globe. He has also made presentations at the Pentagon, the U.S. State Department, the U.S. House Armed Services Committee, the Army War College, the National Defense University, and other government and non-governmental institutions in the United States and abroad. He's a frequent expert commentator on radio and TV. He most recently caught my attention with his latest report entitled 400 Days and Out of Iraq, a strategy for resolving the Iraq impasse. Welcome to the Brad Show, Mr. Canetta. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. My pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here, and great to have someone who knows what the hell they're talking about. So thanks for joining us. All right, in a nutshell, if that sort of thing is possible, what's the strategy for getting us the hell out, Carl?
Well, you know, the important thing for us to recognize in thinking about Iraq and the difficulties we're facing there, what are the objectives? Ask ourselves, what are the objectives that the United States has pursued inside of Iraq? There was a lot of dissent around going to war. Most of the world opposed the U.S. Going into Iraq. Once the war was an accomplished fact and Hussein, the demise of his regime was accomplished, it should have been possible to create a sort of consensus view of what do we do now for people who supported the war and even those who opposed it. All of us would have recognized that, all right, it's done. How do we stabilize the situation? How do we move this society forward? What's feasible? What is reasonably within the range of international law once the things that many people opposed were accomplished? And there's probably a set of things that could have been done. We could have helped the country move toward democratic institutions. We could have brought to justice those people who were most responsible for violations of international law inside of Iraq, people in the same regime that had pursued genocidal policies towards minorities inside the country. Obviously, address the humanitarian crisis there, and to begin to undo some of the harm of the war and the sanctions period. You could have had consensus on those set of objectives. Actually, the administration has attempted to do much more than that. They are really trying to redefine the political balance between the various parties and ideologies inside of Iraq, trying to promote a neoliberal agenda, trying to push forward people who do not have much of a grassroots base inside the country, and to establish the country as a reliable ally and base of operations for the region. All of those things drive a large number of Iraqis into opposition. They invite the opposition of neighboring countries, making this a very, very, very difficult mission to accomplish. If we can separate ourselves from those objectives, which in my opinion are unnecessary to our security or to the security of the Iraqis, are not realizable, they're not realistic objectives, if we can set those aside, I think it's much easier to think about resolving this situation quickly.
You said, let me just jump in here. You said in your report, actually, that had we tried to accomplish a lot less, we actually would have ended up accomplishing a lot more. Yes,
it's certainly the case in Iraq, and it's often the case in our lives and in the world, often the ideal, depending on one's perspective, the ideal is made the enemy of the good. And in this particular case, of course, the administration is pursuing very ambitious objectives, many of which have nothing to do with democracy the way most people understand it. What does the pushing a neoliberal agenda in the country, basically free markets, privatization, open up the country to foreign capital in a way that very few countries, including the United States, are open. To do these things, well, you could either agree with it or disagree with it. It has very little to do with security objectives, very little to do with advancing democracy. And it certainly, from the Iraqi point of view, and this is pretty true across the political spectrum with a few exceptions, it's viewed as overly intrusive. And it gives the entire mission the perception of being a neo-colonial endeavor.
Well, now let me back up here because we still haven't gotten to how the heck we get out, which I understand because there's a lot of ground to cover here.
Sure.
But you keep referring to this as neoliberal. Now this is different from what we hear that these are neoconservatives who are running this war.
That's right.
Explain that difference, if you could.
Well, you know, when I'm using the term neoliberal, I'm really referring to a set of economic objectives. Neoconservatives often tend to adopt neoliberal economic points of view, and in that they're not that different from some of the people in the previous administration,
right,
who favored lowering all sorts of barriers to foreign capital, the wide open foreign trade, very little constraint on the free market. A weak government, small government, those set of ideas are not isolated and solely on the side of the conservatives. They have adherents in the Democratic Party, and they're generally referred to as a neoliberal agenda. So it's a little bit of a contradiction, but people that we refer to as neoconservatives politically often embrace a neoliberal economic agenda.
Oh, I don't think they're going to like that one bit, Mr.
Well,
Canetta.
I don't think they'll actually mind them, let me tell you the truth. It's
okay.
Sort of a classical liberalism,
right.
and not the sort of welfare state liberalism.
Okay, now, you say that they've gone in with these great objectives, perhaps too many objectives, which has gotten us into trouble. Now, the question that I have before we ask you how the heck we get out is, are the objectives that they state they are in there after, is that really what they're after? Because part of your plan says, you know, if they scale back on this and that and the other thing, do we have any reason to believe they want to scale back on those things?
Well, some people certainly don't. But the reason we're in there is not simply because the administration and a set of leaders inside the administration want us to be there. They have been able, though there is growing opposition, they have also been able to maintain a fair degree of support, and despite all sorts of problems. From the beginning of the war right up to the last presidential election, despite all of those problems, the president was able to take the election, which to me says that there's still a degree of support in the country. We're beginning to see bare majorities saying that we need to get out soon and we should never have gone in. But in the context of the war on terrorism, a bare majority is not enough. So there's still broad support for staying. Let's just say the support is broad enough so that the administration does not yet feel compelled to leave. I'm interested in speaking to some of those people who do support those policies. I don't think the majority of them are dyed-in-the-wool neoconservatives who are going to stay the course regardless of the outcome. So I think we need to address it to those people to suggest to them a very important idea. There is an alternative. A lot of folks don't see how do we leave without the country descending into civil war and chaos. And what we need to say is that, well, there is an alternative. I don't know if the administration will pursue it, but if more people believe that there is a way out, the probability increases.
Well, yes.
And it's a lesson that we can carry into the next election, both the congressional election and the next presidential election, that there was an alternative.
Well, you're certainly more generous than I would be about the level of support for it in this country, and of course what even what happened in the last election, but we'll not open that can of worms this particular hour. So you say there is an alternative. We can get out. A lot of people say that, you know, we can't. The country will descend into civil war. So your plan, 400 days and out of Iraq, I presume, does not descend the country into civil war. How so?
Well, I think that the first, the principal move here is a political move, and we need to recognize that that we have become party to a conflict that is increasingly has an ethnic hue to it, and what we need to do is to remove that ethnic hue. One way to do it is to respond to some of the concerns inside of the Sunni community. A lot of people tend to confuse the Hussein regime with Sunnis in general. Huge mistake. And we need to move away from that. So some of the initiatives that would help would be to guarantee that all of the provinces inside of Iraq, they're actually called governorates, but they're essentially provinces or states, that they have a set number of seats, representative seats, inside of the assembly there. Currently, the case is, it's not the case, as it is in the United States, that a state will have a certain set number of seats. And what it means is that, depending on how well you do in an election, an entire region of the country can find themselves essentially with little or no control or power inside the assembly. We've got to get rid of that. That is a way of saying to the Sunni community, at present, we know you're not as organized as you used to be, but we're not trying to promote Shiite domination or Kurdish domination. Every province gets a set number of seats, and then you go ahead and elect people locally. That would respond to an important concern in the Sunni community. Another thing that we need to drop is the sort of broad brush de-Baathification. It's kind of targeted former members of the Ba'ath Party, and there were as many as 1.5 million to a variety of sanctions. Some of these people we need to go after. And if they can be indicted for crimes, they should be indicted. But we shouldn't have the sort of broad brush policies that have been pursued, first by the coalition and then subsequently by the Iraqi government.
Well, now, how much control, and I realize that there's an ethnic slant against the Sunnis in the government, in the new security forces, all across the board, as I understand your report to discuss. What can the United States do? Do we really have the control to go in there and explain to them that this needs to happen, or is this a plan that needs to be sold to the Iraqis themselves to do?
Well, it has to be sold, but we can also apply pressure. At present, the Shiite government there is disinclined to long-term U.S. presence, but very dependent on it in the short term, because they cannot implement their policy path without relying on the presence of the U.S. military, which gives the United States a fair amount of leverage. I would say that any road out of the country also involves us de-escalating the confrontation with Syria and Iran, and in exchange, expecting Iran to play a role in encouraging the Shiite government there to liberalize some of its policies with regard to the Sunnis. In other words, we need to solve a number of problems on a number of fronts that principally diplomatic and political problems. And that's one of the messages of the proposal, that this isn't just a question of how fast can we train the local military. We can do a better job than we've done. One of the reasons we've done such a poor job is because we haven't applied the resources necessary. So we can do better, but it isn't principally a military question. It's principally a political question. We have made too many enemies unnecessarily. The core of the Hussein regime can be indicted and tried for criminal violations of international law. But there we are talking about hundreds of people. We are not talking about 1.5 million Iraqis. When we talk, those are the estimated size of the Ba'ath Party. None of those people constitutionally are allowed to hold high office, the highest offices in the government.
The Ba'athists are shut out constitutionally from being in
the
government.
Top level Ba'athists.
Right.
I'm talking about anybody who has been in the party for the past 10 years. You could have been a nominal member. You could have done it simply as a matter of getting an advancement in your job as a teacher in a local school. You could have done it to get rid of suspicions from other Ba'athists. You could have done it for any number of reasons. Because you did it constitutionally, you cannot hold high office, the highest offices, the 5 or 6 highest offices. Now, that was part of the Constitution that we handed them, that was written actually by the Coalition Provisional Authority. If that type of provision makes it into the next Constitution, then we are in for a very long-term struggle between the Shiites and the Sunnis, and it probably implies a much longer involvement for the United States, unless we decide to simply cut and run.
Okay, speaking of cut and run, let's talk about that after this commercial break.
Okay.
Sorry, I got to get to a hard break here. We're speaking with Carl Canetta from the Project on Defense Alternatives. Going to talk about his plan to get the hell out of Iraq. He knows what he's talking about, and we'll pick his brain some more after this break. You're listening to The Brad Show on Raw Radio.
Raw Radio. Radio. Radio.
Gentilly Show is a progressive radio talk show that includes paranormal, alternative, unusual, and other than mainstream topics. Hi, this is Lou Gentilly. Join me Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the IBC Radio Network, where we explore ghosts, UFOs, unexplained phenomena, and the paranormal. Check out our website, www.lougentilly.com. The Lou Gentilly Show, paranormal talk radio with an edge.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
The future of radio. The IBC Radio Network.
Are you looking for a long-term, high-growth investment? Are you sick of the here-today and gone-tomorrow companies and stock prices that collapse to zero? Just as in life itself, there are no guarantees on Wall Street. But high-risk investors should check out International Broadcasting Corporation, trading on the over-the-counter bulletin board, stock symbol IBCS. IBCS is focused upon building successful publishing, broadcasting, and media ventures. IBCS is the parent company of the IBC Radio Network, a 24/7 satellite-distributed, all-talk radio service. In a little over 2 years, IBC Radio Network has been transformed from an obscure radio service carrying shows found elsewhere into a talk network providing exclusive original material. Shows like Stock Talk Live, believed to be the very first fully interactive 7-hour-long business radio talk show focused exclusively on penny stocks. Another hugely popular show is The Lou Gentili Show, paranormal talk radio at its finest. Lou Gentili is not just a talk show host, but a real paranormal investigator. For a conservative political talk show, check out Talk Show America. Each weekday, host JR interacts with his listeners to bring you a unique talk show experience not found anywhere else. Everyone knows the key to success on Wall Street is finding opportunities before they get discovered by the general population. IBCS has recently experienced phenomenal growth and may be on the verge of being discovered. The company is on a mission to make itself a household name. So if you're a high-risk, high-reward investor, we recommend that you take a look at International Broadcasting Corporation, stock symbol IBCS. For more information, visit the website at www.ibcrn.com. That's ibcrn.com. Remember, the stock market is risky and you could lose some or all of your money. You could make money too. This message is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. You should never make risky investments without the consultation of a professional investment advisor. This message is paid for by International Broadcasting Corporation, a publicly traded company, stock symbol IBCS.
You need advertising. Without it, no one will hear about your business. Radio is the way to go. Advertising on radio is much more affordable than newspapers, magazines, or television. Advertise your website, product, or service to intelligent, savvy, and moneyed listeners of a 24/7 talk radio network. The IBC Radio Network is the way to go. For more information, call 509-466-3413. That's 509-466-3413. The IBC Radio Network, the future of radio. Paul Booth, Ed Balkley, John Carpenter, Kevin Clement, Roger Corman, Don Coscarelli, Wes Craven, Guillermo del Toro, Mick Garris, Lou Gentili, Stuart Gordon, Sid Haig, Toby Hooper, Lloyd Kaufman, Alfredo Leon, Lucky McKee, Robert Parigi, George Romero, Eli Roth, Tom Savini, David J. Scull, Mike Varani, Joe Wolf, Rob Zombie. These are the people on the creative advisory board of the Horror Channel. Are you a horror fan? Coming soon, the only 24-hour cable and satellite network dedicated to horror fans around the world. For more information, visit their website at www.horrorchannel.com. That's www.horrorchannel.com. Please call your local cable and satellite providers and tell them that you want the Horror Channel. Make sure they log your call.
If you think that ghosts just don't exist, think again.
Ghosts have been captured in photographs, on audio tapes, and even in film. Yes, ghosts do exist at www.renesghosts.com.
Attention pet owners, how would you like your dog or cat to behave instantly on command? Now you can with a pet trainer. So easy to use, it's like having a remote control for your pet. No electric zaps or shocks. This simple handheld device uses safe and effective ultrasonic sound that commands your pet's attention like magic. Here's how it works. Say your dog jumps on your best furniture. Just press the button to emit the sound. As he snaps to attention, give the command to get down. As soon as he obeys, praise him for the good behavior, and that's it. Veterinarian endorsed. endorsed, Pet Trainer is the humane way to train pets. Whether it's nonstop barking, chewing shoes, pestering house guests, you name it. Plus, it's the animal-friendly way to deal with unwelcome strays or neighbors' dogs. Satisfaction guaranteed, so call now to try it risk-free. Pet Trainer, just $19.95, plus shipping. Uses 9-volt battery not included. To order by credit card, call toll-free 1-800-418-8877. That's 1-800-418-8877. 1-800-418-8877.
The future of radio. The IBC Radio Network.
Rocking ya here on the Brad Show. I am your friendly citizen blogger, Brad Friedman, back on the Brad Show via the Brad Show on Raw Radio. And let's see, we're speaking with Carl Canetta from the Project on Defense Alternatives. I want to give out his website so you can get a sense of this plan for 400 days and out of Iraq at www.comw. That's M as in Mary, .org/PDA. That's comw.org/PDA. And you can get an idea of his plan for getting out of Iraq and resolving the what he calls the Iraqi impasse, which is a very generous way to put it. I admit, Mr. Canetta, that I'm probably more cynical than you are about what's going on, why we're there, and the administration's real interest in getting out. I don't know how interested they are. Now, you speak of in your plan of de-escalating, you mentioned it in the first segment there, of de-escalating the U.S. confrontation with Syria and Iran on a range of issues. I'd love, perhaps, if you could tell me in layman's words here, why is the U.S. even confronting those two countries right now when they seem to be having more than enough trouble in Iraq and Afghanistan? And for whatever reason they're doing it, why would the U.S. suddenly have an interest in de-escalating anyway? I mean, what would be in it for them?
Well, the reasons we're there are complex, and they've built a coalition of opinion. But I would say that the core within the administration, the folks who are most interested, see themselves forcing a transformation of the Middle East. Why we're involved in the Middle East, I think that the principal reason is kind of obvious. It's oil. This makes the Middle East strategically important to a number of countries. Whoever exercises control over oil exercises control over Europe and Japan, and can easily influence the world economic environment.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. So that said, then why is would they have a real interest in de-escalating at this point? Wouldn't they rather sort of keep their hooks on everything out there?
Well, I think some would, and probably including the president and the vice president. Secretary of Defense, a number of their top advisors, basically the whole the neoconservative slice. They don't rule this country as dictators. They need to build a coalition. And even within conservative circles, there's a fair amount of opposition to the administration's position. And a lot of people are supportive simply because they don't see an alternative. How is this sold broadly to folks who do not own stock in oil companies? That's a key question, and that's what we like to address through trying to articulate an alternative. That there is a way out. A lot of people, I guess you could say this is an assumption, but our assumption is that a lot of people who support this war support it because they think it's necessary to our security. They support it because they think it is doing some good, they don't think it's necessarily the best approach to things in the world, but with this particular situation, how do we get out is the question that a lot of people ask.
Well, you brought...
And we are trying to address those people. I don't expect that the president is going to... is going to listen to us or the top advisors or the core supporters of this war. But we're not really addressing those folks principally. We're addressing people who have some questions and who may have come to say, let's say, a bad position, but based on essentially good impulses.
So your plan then would be useful. You're not so much trying to sell it to the administration per se, but rather those people who are interested in getting out but don't necessarily know how the heck they can do it because they're being told that, oh, if we leave, it'll devolve into civil war. So you're saying to those people, hey, here is some ammo to use, so to speak. Here is how we can get out of Iraq. Don't let them tell you it can't be done. Is that...
That's exactly right. Now, and there are also people in Congress on both the Democratic and the Republican side who continue to support the war. I mean, most people in Congress do. For those folks who may at some point feel pressure politically, it's important that they can see that there is an alternative. That it doesn't simply come down to a question of cut and run. Whatever happens, there happens, and we simply turn our back on a situation that we created. That's an untenable position for a lot of people. Whether this administration implements an alternative like the one we're suggesting, I think it's unlikely unless the pressure grows, and it will grow, but it has to grow substantially. But then there's also the next administration. And what we're trying to pinpoint here with the proposal is that what's needed to get out has to do with compromise, and it has to do with diplomacy in the region, and it has to do with reminding ourselves what are the key objectives, what are the key things that people were really concerned about. And I'm not talking about the president. I'm talking about Americans who supported the war. A lot of them were worried about security issues. A lot of them are now worried about what happens in that region if we just leave.
Yeah, you said that there's a lot of folks who believe that this war is, in fact, keeping us safe and secure and it's doing some good. Is it keeping us safe and secure? Is it doing some good, or is it doing more harm than good? Because that's what it appears to be doing.
In my estimate, it's doing more harm than good. I think that some of these the recent reports that came out both from Israel, from an Israeli study center, and also from Saudi Arabia, where they did a very intensive look at insurgents who were captured and interrogated, but also looking at the background of some of the. Some of the bombers, some of the suicide bombers, they came to the conclusion that, by and large, these people were not terrorists prior to the war.
Right.
What brought them into this activity was the war itself. Clearly, it has pushed the public opinion with regard to the United States into the single-digit numbers, the support for the U.S., single-digit numbers in that region, which is extremely bad if we're thinking about what direction will politics go in the region. Even if the region opens up democratically, who will be elected? What will be their opinion with regard to the United States? So I think that it's clear that the war has not served our security interests. And that's a point that we make in other studies. But for some people, the real question is, what is the likelihood that if we simply left, now we could, practically speaking, pull our troops out securely within 3 months. And here I mean by securely, I mean without stumbling over ourselves.
But actually, before you get there, Carl, let me just ask you, because it was an important point that you made that I just want to make sure that I understand. Because even the State Department, by my understanding, has said in their reports, and they've downplayed them, but that there has been a great deal more terrorist incidents since Iraq, since 9/11, than we had before. So is it fair to say, and I just sort of want to get this out on the record, is it fair to say that Iraq is, in essence, around the world, creating more terrorists than it's actually destroying?
Well, I would say that that's right. That that if our choice here was, should we, just if our interest is in impact on terrorist activity, should we have done this or should we have not? Clearly, the answer is we should not have done this, right? But that doesn't tell us what happens if we simply leave. If we simply leave, that removes some of the stimulus for terrorist activity. But if the country descends into ethnic war, you have the likelihood of terrorist activity being replaced by something else, and you still have a breeding ground of terrorism. I think that a more optimal approach within realism is to try to find a way to stabilize the country, but through non-military means, principally through non-military means.
If we pull out, does, in your estimation, does the country devolve into civil war? If we, let's just say we say, okay, we're done, we're leaving next week, we're out, does it devolve, in fact, into civil war?
I think that the likelihood, I would say the likelihood of all-out civil war, I wouldn't say that it's a 60-40. I would say that it's certainly a 40-60. That is to say, it's too close for comfort. Because if that did happen, you're looking at the potential of a regional conflict and the whole region and the country continuing to be a generator of not just terrorist activity, but all sorts of humanitarian crisis, all sorts of problems for the region and for the world. So it's too close to simply say, let's give it a shot. Let's just leave within 3 months.
Well, that's what I was...
Pull up our tents and go.
Let me ask you that question then in another way. If you put the odds at 40-60, are the odds... do you feel that the odds are better that we won't devolve into civil war if we stay? Because it seems to be heading that way anyway, does it not?
I would say the potential is there. You know, it is actually far from a true civil war situation. A lot of people, too many people, are being killed. And you know, we're talking about a level of violence that surpasses what the situation was prior to the demise of Saddam Hussein. If you compare the last 2 years of his reign to the first 2 years of the post-Saddam period, comparison is not very good. So I don't want to minimize the level of violence there. However, it's still far from how bad it could be. It is not a Rwanda situation, for instance. It's not as bad as the Balkans was at some points. So, but we are close. I think that the United States, we both constitute a brake as well as we sort of have our foot on the brake and on the gas pedal. We are driving violence there, but there's also a limitation that we have a tremendous amount of power to apply if we wanted to stop something.
Well,
so it's, I think it's important to think about how we leave. But when you move into practical politics, the likelihood of building a broad winning coalition around the idea of let's just cut and run, that's not going to happen in the near future. It could happen in 3 years, as it happened in Vietnam, that eventually the country is simply exhausted. I'm interested in trying to figure a way out within the next 400 days.
Yeah, well, and you've... Got to give you credit that you've laid out a plan that nobody else seems to be able to come up with, certainly not the administration. We got to take a short break here. When I come back, I want to ask you about what needs to be... Well, the administration says that if we start announcing we're going to pull out, that the terrorists are going to hang around and wait, and as soon as we're gone, they're in business. I want to get your response to their thoughts on that. We're speaking with Carl Canetta, the Project on Defense Alternatives.
Hi, this is James Arthur Yanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here. On Feet to the Fire.
Feet.
Sunday evenings. 8 to 11 Eastern.
Fire.
Live. On the IBC Radio Network.
It's no secret that the trick to making big money on Wall Street is finding out about a company and pre-positioning yourself before it gets discovered. Check out Viper Networks Incorporated, ticker symbol VPER. Viper Networks is a diversified technology development company that markets innovative products and services. Viper is becoming widely known for its VPhone, a revolutionary product for making telephone calls over the internet. With the VPhone, you can make crystal-clear international and long-distance calls for the price of a local call. Computer-to-computer calls cost only a penny per minute. VPhone connects easily to any personal computer with simple plug-and-play technology. As with all investments, you should consult with a financial advisor before getting involved. This announcement is paid for by VPER and is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. You could lose some or all of your money. You could make money, too. Learn all about Viper Networks by visiting their website at www.vipernetworks.com. That's www.vipernetworks.com.
If you think that ghosts just don't exist, think again.
Ghosts have been captured in photographs, on audio tapes, and even in film. Yes, ghosts do exist at www.renesghosts.com. Life Enthusiast Co-op offers anti-aging and age reversal supplements that help rejuvenate and enrich your body. Visit their website to learn more about these products at life-enthusiast.com.
Finally, an FM transmitter for your PC that works. Introducing the all-new PCI Max 2005. PCI Max 2005 is a computer card that plugs into any existing PC and that will change the way that you listen to your MP3s or live audio forever. It will effectively change your PC into an FM radio station that is FCC Part 15 legal. For more information, visit their website at pcs-electronics.com.
In 2004, IBC had a major hard drive failure on a computer that housed all of our audio commercial backups. I thought we were going to have to shell out big bucks. Until I stumbled across a little company claiming their software could do what the $1,000 companies could do. Well, it worked. Get data back. Try a demo today and stop searching for high-priced solutions. Visit runtime.org. That's runtime.org.
Is your name written in the Bible code? Is your past, present, and future encoded in ancient scriptures? Find the answers with Code Finder Millennium Edition Bible Code Software. Discover for yourself the enigmatic phenomenon that is the Bible code. Visit our website now and gain instant access to the world's number one ranked Bible code software, Code Finder, used by thousands of researchers worldwide. Find us at www.codefinder.us. That's www.codefinder.us.
The Lou Gentile Show is a progressive radio talk show that includes paranormal, alternative, unusual, and other than mainstream topics. Hi, this is Lou Gentile. Join me Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the IBC Radio Network, where we explore ghosts, UFOs, unexplained phenomena, and the paranormal. Check out our website, www.lougentile.com. The Lou Gentile Show, paranormal talk radio with an edge.
The future of radio, the IBC Radio Network.
Though we sadly sang for them our last song, and reluctantly we said so long, we did our best to let them know that we care for every last one of them that's over there. Whether we belong over there or not, somebody over here loves us and needs us. Well, now that's about all that there is to tell about that little trip into living hell. And if I ever go back over there anymore, hope there's none of our boys there for me to sing for. I hope that war's over with and they all come back home to stay in peace.
Yes, we hope so too, Brother Cash. We're speaking with Carl Canetta here on the Brad Show via Raw Radio. Mr. Canetta from the Project on Defense Alternatives. You can get more information on his plan for 400 days and out of Iraq, a strategy for resolving the Iraq impasse at www.comw.org/PDA. We've got just a few minutes left here. If you'd like to talk to Mr. Canetta, you can give us a call quickly at 323-650-1286. We'll see if we have time. Before the break, I was asking about the fact that the Bush administration has frequently said that if we offer any plan, it seems, for leaving, that the terrorists will just wait longer, you know, one day longer. And so they've sort of backed themselves into a corner where it seems like I don't know how the hell they ever plan on getting out. So when we look at your plan, giving them here the benefit of the doubt, aren't they right? If you announce 400 days and out, aren't they just going to wait 401 days, Carl Canetta?
Well, I think it's an interesting logic that they apply, and I think you're indicating it there. And you think about how do they see ending it? I mean, their approach is that you extinguish the terrorist element, right? And then you leave. Except if you want to base a policy in facts at all, the facts indicate that the presence there is generating more terrorists than we're killing. So there's no end to their approach. But you're quite right in that the principal response to any type of timeline, the plan I suggested or some of the plans that have been floated in Congress, is to say that if you suggest that you're leaving within a year, they're just going to wait you out. Well, who are they? First thing that we need to do is to break down the they into their components. Our estimate is that between 25% and a third of the insurgent incidents or activities in the country can be attributed to either the former regime diehards, people who want to have a return to the old ways, or to the foreign Islamic extremists or terrorist elements, right? Between a quarter and a third of the insurgent activity is attributable to those folks. And those are the ones who might try to wait out a U.S. exit. Well, what about all the rest, which is the majority of insurgent activity? We estimate that the source of that, and this is derived principally from public opinion polls and from these surveys I talked about where people are talking to insurgents, and not just the government's talking to them, but also a lot of journalists. Their motivations tend to be nationalistic, tribalistic, or ethnic. That they are in the fight because we are there.
So they might.
So
be,
they're going to get a different message. Different motivations.
They may be happy.
Motivations will hear a different message.
And they may be happy for us to leave. I hate to cut you off there because we're coming up to the end of this hour, Mr. Canetta, because you're a font of information. But we only have about another 40 seconds here. Very quickly, there's a lot of different numbers. I don't know if you can give your best idea, but how many civilian casualties have there been in Iraq? Do you have any idea?
I'm going to lowball it. I'm going to go with how few might there be.
Okay.
I would say that the lowest number that is feasible is around 20,000.
What's
and
the highest?
Anybody who suggests that it's less than that is really not interested in paying attention to any type of evidence. It's a purely ideological point.
In 15 seconds left, what's the highest number it could
highest
be?
Highest estimates I've seen are in excess of 100,000, and that's people not only killed through military action, but also criminal violence and people who have died for nonviolent reasons but related to war. For instance, increased child mortality. So the highest I've seen is over 100,000. But I don't think you're playing in reality if you are talking about less than 20,000.
Carl Canetta from Project on Defense Alternatives. Thanks for spending your time. Sorry, we got to get out. Patricia Birch, Raging Granny, coming up next on the Brad Show on Raw Radio.
Raw Radio. Radio.